can fear and faith exist together?
Can fear and faith exist together like the cobra and the mongoose? Generally, they exist because it's not like fear and faith. There are different parts in the nature. There are parts in which faith has captured. There are parts in which fear has captured. You know, when you buy a land and the person who has sold it keeps a portion to himself, then fear and faith coexist. So within us, there are different parts. Generally, faith comes naturally to the psychic being. Those who are more and more in the closer and closer in the psychic being spontaneously have faith. But their bodies may be afraid. Mind may be afraid. Heart may be afraid of being hurt. Life may be afraid, maybe the lack of courage to take that leap. So slowly now faith has to recapture these parts. The divine must reclaim these different parts. So while they coexist in most people, you have to, I'm not defining faith, belief, they're all different things. Belief is a mental concept. Okay, belief is not faith. Faith is something much deeper. Belief is a, you know, mental thing that if you do this, this happens, divine will help you, that we have our own ideas about things. But faith is that regardless of what happens, all will be well. That is faith. You're not putting a condition or a system of thought through which you are, see, you have done a bad karma, that's why you are suffering. All these are belief systems. But faith is from the soul that all will be well because the divine is taking us through. This faith must slowly spread to other parts of our being. So slowly this faith spreads. When it comes into the mind, then automatically no contradictory thought will come to you because your mind knows it is full of faith. When it comes to the heart, you will understand that all through all the emotions, turbulences and turmoils, she is holding you and carrying you. When it settles into the life, then you will take it that regardless of whatever challenges that come in life, your life is meant to serve the divine, to grow into the divine. That's the function of faith anyways. And then that life will spontaneously begin to turn toward that. In the body, it is far more difficult. But eventually, because body is the guard of the hostile force, is the bastion of fear. There are very few people who are free from fear in the body. The mother recounts the instance of Pranabdha. One only instance where she says that he does not have fear even in the cells of the body. That's how when the stone throwing took place, he is the one who had organized. Absolutely, body right to the cells, no fear. He describes one of the incidences when he is at 2 o'clock, he is sitting. He used to be fond of long drives. He used to go to long drives, Thiruvannamalai and all these places. And Savitridi is there. And then around 2 o'clock, he says, why don't you rest for a while? And she is resting. He describes this in his own book. And then suddenly he sees that there is a ghost who is looking like this. And he sees, he doesn't say anything, he's cool. He doesn't want her to wake up and disturb. After some time, he goes away after, look, no reaction, nothing. So, keep the company of those who are full of faith. Physical fear, to tackle it, the physical culture is very important. So, slowly the body begins to come. Because the more tamas, any part which is occupied with tamas, will be full of fear. Because tamas invites all kinds of anti-divine forces. Because in tamas everything goes, degenerates. So people who keep resting in alasya and tamas, they are prone to diseases paradoxically. They are more prone to strokes and other things, osteoporosis, just because though they are lying down, blood pressure tends to increase precisely because you are in state of tamas. So don't allow tamas to, the more there is tamas, physical tamas, fear will come in. Of course, each nature is different, but by and large. So, it's important for faith to extend into these parts. It's a journey. And best way is to consecrate each part to the divine. For instance, the body, when it is given to the divine for the divine work, faith will come. Fear will go away. But they do coexist together. As you have rightly said, every opposite coexists. The mother goes on to say that you carry your own shadow. So if there is a part which is very generous, there will be a part which is full of avarice. It's a very interesting discovery. That's what is the story of Makardhwaj, where finally, before defeating Ravan, who is the last obstacle? What is the last obstacle that Rama has to go through? It is Ahiravan. You know who is Ahiravan? Ahiravan is cousin of Ravan. Ahi is also again Ajgar. And he lives in the underworld. So what does he do? He says, okay bro, don't worry. I'll do it. So Vibhishan and Ram also says that, you know, tomorrow probably we have to meet Ravan and he's going to be very deadly. We should be alert. Hanuman says, I am there. Lord, I'll keep awake. Lakshman, you also sleep. And they all sleep and Hanuman is keeping awake. But how he is lured? There is a moment of unconsciousness. And then Ahiravan comes and takes. Rama and Lakshman have become unconscious. So, such a effect of unconsciousness, he takes them to the Patal and where he is going to offer them to Patal Bhairavi, their Devi there, as Bali. And they are lying, coolly. Then Hanuman has to go there and Hanuman goes there. What does he meet? He meets his own shadow. So this is the shadow of Ravan. Ravan is the shadow of Vishnu. And Ravan's, that shadow in its ultimate power is in Ahiravan. And when Hanuman goes to rescue, whom does he meet? He meets his lookalike in the Patal. That is called Makardhwaj. So Makardhwaj has he looks like Hanuman, he has the strength of Hanuman, everything like Hanuman, but his body has the impervious like the Makar crocodile. And there is the story that how a sweat part has gone and all this is beautiful, but mythology aspect which you can understand symbolically, but that apart. So ultimately, it's very difficult to beat Makardhwaj. It is his shadow. He is the most challenging enemy opponent. And he is reflecting Hanuman. Hanuman tells him, see, I have come for the work of Ram. So Makardhwaj says, yes, I am here as the watch keeper of Ahiravan. So Ram says, you see, please understand, I have to be faithful to the Lord. He says, exactly, I am being faithful to my Lord. That's exactly what he says. So we have to fight. And he is also unconquerable. But Hanuman is Hanuman. He says, I don't care conquering you. I am going to tie you up. So he ties him up. Because you can't conquer these denizens. Even in Shiva Puran, there is a story of Apsumar. You have heard about Apsumar? You know about how the Nataraj dance? Somebody is from Chidambaram, no? Oh, he didn't come today. So how that comes? So, there is a different levels of difficulty that Mata Parvati has to go through in her yoga. And one of them is when she has to take the challenge of Apsumar. Apsumar is also a term used for growing unconsciousness. So it's a power that operates in the end. And Mata Parvati is not able to remain conscious anymore. You often say, no, why do we forget the divine? This Apsumar fellow is active. To begin with, it's all his territory. You are reclaiming it. You are reclaiming consciousness. That's why for Savitri, okay, that passage, let me keep for the end. So Apsumar starts overpowering Mata Parvati. And he just cannot stay awake. then Shiva comes. Shiva till now is only her guru. It's a beautiful story, Mata Parvati's tapasya. I think all of you must be knowing, it's a fascinating tale. All these steps through which she passes. And then Apsumar says, you cannot kill me. He says, I know I cannot kill you, but I can contain you. So Shiva starts playing the nada and dances. So have you seen when he is dancing in the Nataraj pose, who may be held below his feet? There is a fellow. Seen Shiva's dancing pose? There is a fellow below his feet. That's the demon Apsumar. So he is withholding unconsciousness. Fast forward, Mother and Shurbindo. They speak of these four asuras. What are these four asuras? Falsehood, death, suffering, and unconsciousness. This time she wants to convert, and she succeeded in converting. She says that asura has accepted the conversion. What was not achieved. Yogis, that's why yogis would sit. That's why there is an image of yogis sitting on the whirlpool. So in the domain of unconscious, it has very profound psychological implications. So how can we get rid of this fellow? See, Shobindu gives so many clues, so many places, but we can enjoy. Maybe Savitri is there, so we can read. Anyways, I'll remember some of the lines. So when he describes in book 2, canto 8, at the end, there is a description. And that description, canto 8 is the world of falsehood. Canto 7 is descent into night. So at the end, he encounters that bedrock where beings slept, not knowing the world he is creating. That power is so great. The being who is there has slept off, not knowing what he is creating. And so, Apsumar, that unconsciousness, how it becomes conscious. Okay. So, the power of Savitri, it comes at the end. After he has plunged into the darkness and made the being conscious. It's a whole story, inconscient when the mother goes and that being becomes conscious, opens the eyes. All that mother has described very beautifully, that's a whole saga. But we are just, since we are talking of this fellow Apsumar, who tried to obstruct Hanuman and he was tied, who tried to obstruct Parvatiji and Shiva kept him under check, dancing over him. Now he is converted. But what can we do? What's our take home point? How can we change? So, this is page 231, 232. I'll read that part, 232, which to me is when Shurbindra has entered into the depths of falsehood, and when he comes out, then he extracts and brings out Savitri is that which comes as the last nectar after he goes through Kalkut. He brings out that nectar and gives to man. You see, that's why Savitri, all these chapters got so much expanded after the Second World War. So he plunged himself into the darkness, brings out nectar and places it to us, and that nectar is Savitri. So what is the description? Which is as if Shurbindu is describing, as if, because he's not saying that I am describing Savitri, but it is Savitri's description. You can see it and its action. If somebody asks, what is Savitri? Not the book and all that, but if you were to describe that, what is the action of Savitri? What is this book? So this is the description which comes at the end of book 2, canto 8, which is the world of falsehood. After entirely plunging, tackling the Kalkut wish, poison, then nectar, then that nectar is given words. Okay. Page 232. Falsehood gave back to truth her tortured shape. How does falsehood act? Always it will carry some truth which it will twist. It doesn't have any original creativity. It will twist it. That's why somebody said very interesting that recently in the post-elections, I don't like to discuss politics, but anyway, that see, you people lost in Ayodhya, which is the god of Rama. So there was a very interesting reply one of the ministers gave. At least you admit there was Rama in Ayodhya. Up till now you are not admitting. So you see, it's a little bit of funny thing, but falsehood gave back to truth her tortured shape. Annulled were the tables of the law of pain, and in their place grew luminous characters. The skillful penman's unseen finger wrote his swift intuitive calligraphy. Earth's forms were made his divine documents. All that is there in creation, that Veda, original Veda, which is embedded in creation, that's what Sri Aurobindo brings out and reveals. The wisdom embodied mind could not reveal. In conscience chased from the world's voiceless breast. Action of Savitri. And you'll see how. Transfigured were the fixed schemes of reasoning thought. Arousing consciousness in things inert. Savitri ki mahima. Arousing consciousness in things inert, he imposed upon dark atom and dumb mass the diamond script of the imperishable. Now you see, those words will come, which is relating to a book. The diamond script of the imperishable, inscribed on the dim heart of fallen things. A pain song of the free infinite, and the name, foundation of eternity, and traced on the awake exultant cells in the ideographs of the ineffable, the lyric of the love that waits through time, and the mystic volume of the book of bliss and the message of the superconscient fire. So I do believe, and I have my own experiences, number of experiences with this, that Savitri keeps you awake even in where there is unconsciousness. You know, Nityo Nityanam, Chetanas Chetananam. So it is the one which goes so deep inside, works upon the cell, makes us conscious in there where it is unconscious. What is it about? Fear, huh? Fear comes from unconsciousness. Okay?